Welcome to Play the Advantage U.S. Men's National Team Podcast. I'm Danny Day alongside Cody Carlson. Cody and I were college soccer teammates, and we are big U.S. Men's National Team fans. This podcast covers everything U.S. Men's National Team related.
And here we are, the day after the CONCACAF Nations League final. USA 3, Mexico 2. Cody Carlson, how are you feeling today, sir?
Oh, man, I am, to be honest, a little bit hungover, but just still living that game on repeat in my head. Wow, all the emotions. So stoked, so excited. USA, Kings of CONCACAF, back where we're supposed to be, at least for the time being.
At least for the time being, but it does feel good. We have not beaten Mexico in a competitive match since 2013. It has been 8 years. And, yeah, we beat them in a friendly a couple years ago. But to beat them in a competitive match, whether that's the Gold Cup, World Cup qualifying, now Nations League, right? When you put competitive match on something, both teams are going to bring it. You saw both teams A squads tonight, or excuse me, last night, and – man, what a game it was. And excited to be back on top, at least for the moment. But hopefully we can see this just for the continued future.
Yeah, no doubt. And this game, I mean, it played out like a movie. Like you couldn't – like
so true.
You know, it was like a movie script. It had everything. It had, you know, it had mistakes early on. It had goals. It had, you know, refereeing decisions that were, you know – influenced the game heavily.
Highly
questionable. It had injuries. It had, you know, a red card to Mexico's coach, Martino. It had injury to your starting goalie, and then a Cinderella story. Horvath comes in, saves the peak. I mean, it was unbelievable. Drama, drama, drama.
You're absolutely – I mean, they could absolutely make a movie out of this. And, yeah, and then I think I sent you a text when Horvath came in. I said – Time for Horvath to be the hero. And hey, lo and behold, about 60 minutes later in stoppage time, he comes up big, makes the save to essentially, at that point, clinch the game for the U.S. and the title.
Yeah.
But man, this game did have it all, though. And the fans, the Mexican El Tri fans throwing beer bottles, Coca-Cola from up in the stands down, nailing players in the face and the head.
Yep.
El Tri fans who are also have really had disciplinary action in the past from FIFA for having homophobic chants. Yep. And that almost came, or they came to fruition a little bit, right, in the regular time stoppage time.
Yep.
So I think some really – and it's interesting. Just talking to fans real quick. Gosh, the atmosphere was phenomenal. It's just so fun after this whole COVID-19 year to see – fans back in the stands here in the United States. And what an atmosphere was, both USA and Mexico, with just great contingents there cheering on their teams. But, man, the El Tri fans, it will be really interesting to see what FIFA and CONCACAF do, because these sort of things cannot just continue to be – they cannot be given a pass time after time after time, or it's going to continue to happen, whether it's – like in the past, they're throwing – down at the Azteca, throwing things at the United States players – or here in Denver throwing things at the United States players. It's just not acceptable in addition to the homophobic chants.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a disgraceful part of the game that, you know, you don't want to see. I mean, we have to get this out of the game. You know, it's not something that we need, and none of the players want it too. I did find it kind of comical though when one of the Mexico players actually got hit by a full cup of beer or something, and then only then did the rest of the team tell the fans, hey, come on, settle down, you know.
But right,
it took it to finally have an errant throw to nail one of their own players for them to kind of chill out. And so I kind of couldn't help but have a little laugh on that one.
Yeah, I saw a replay of that from the stands. There's a fan who got a video of that. And Jordan Cibachu had the perfect duck out of the way, enough move.
Yeah.
And then
He checked his shoulders. He checked his shoulders. He had some good awareness, you know.
Very good field awareness there.
He saw the tackle coming in, and then it ended up hitting the, you know, the Mexico player. I can't remember who it hit, but crazy.
Yeah, man. But the game definitely had it all. You mentioned it. Yellow card,
I mean, this was a CONCACAF game. This was a CONCACAF game.
To the pinnacle.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So. You know, questionable refereeing, fans throwing things, red cards, yellow cards, fights. You know, the Mexican players putting their hands around Weston McKennie's throat per usual when they play each other. And again, no red card. And that was the same guy who had the yellow card. Herrera put his hand around Weston McKennie's throat.
Yep.
Nothing for him. Yep. It had it all. It had it all.
Yeah. Yeah.
But should we look at let's get to it here. Let's look at this our starting lineup. Because I want to focus on us. So maybe you want to take us through our starting lineup and what that looked like. We can kind of just walk through who was where.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I'll be honest. You know, we were kind of chatting or texting before the game, just trying to pick who we think we're going to have guess the lineup, you know. And we were jokingly saying, oh, watch him start, you know, Tim Ream and Kellen Acosta. I wouldn't be surprised if he do that. Ha, ha, ha. Well, sure enough, starting lineup gets announced, and you know Ream and Acosta are in there. And you know, at first I just saw the list, not you know position oriented, and then I looked at, I think it was ESPN had him in a 4-3-3, and they had Tim Ream as the 10, and I'm going, what the hell is going on?
Yes.
But, you know, after a second look, I was like, okay, this has to be wrong. No chance. But I had like a mini heart attack. I was like, well, we're going to lose this game badly.
Yes. So we had Stefan in the back. And
yep, Stefan in goal.
Back three.
Yep, back three in a 3-4-3. It looked like Tim Ream as the left center back, John Brooks center back, Mark McKenzie right center back. Your right-sided wing back was DeAndre Yedlin, who got the call up. And then Des on the left side as the left wing back. Then you had Kellen Acosta and Weston McKennie as your two central guys. Acosta was playing more as the 6, McKennie as the 8, naturally. And then you had Sargent as the 9, Gio Reyna as the 7, and Pulisic as the 11 as your wingers. And they were obviously interchangeable and have kind of a fluid. They're not stuck on those sides. You know, they can go wherever they want. So that was our 3-4-3 to start. And I'll be honest, Danny, I was having a hard time with some of those decisions. I mean, Tim Ream and Acosta, as we mentioned, and then Yedlin gets a surprise start after having not played for us too much. And,
yeah,
you know, it's just a little bit of a head scratcher.
Yeah, the Yedlin start was, granted, he played okay when he came in against the Swiss in the friendly. Didn't play at all against Honduras, comes in, gets the start in the final against Mexico. So I was thinking, okay. So Berhalter is deciding to go with maybe a guy just with a little bit more experience. He felt like that was the way to go in this game.
Yep.
And hey, I mean, we'll get to this again too, but ended up getting the dub. So, hey, phenomenal. But I think we can definitely look at some of the decision-making from Berhalter of you go with Tim Ream in the back. And I'll say this, it was a 3-4-3, but a lot of the times, you looked at it out there, and it almost kind of turned into really more four in the back with Yedlin dropping back and Ream moving over to that left. And so it was Tim Ream playing in that left back position. And looked up the stats here, Cody. You know me being a former statistician. Tim Ream, 0 games at left back this year for Fulham. Whereas you have his partner there at Fulham, Anthony Robinson, 28 games played at left back for Fulham. Anthony Robinson, again, we talked about this against the Honduras in the Honduras game. Wasn't great, but wasn't bad. I mean, he was serviceable. Yeah. And if we're going through a game and saying he's not bad, I would much rather have that than and again, Tim Ream actually made some very good plays, looked very lively in that first half for at parts, winning headers, winning duels. But man, they decided real quickly that they were going to go right after him.
Well, and in his defense, he had a pretty solid game for the most part. but towards, I think it was, you know, once we're hitting the 70th minute, and then you could clearly see Tata Martino's going, okay, here we go. Get the ball out wide to attack Tim Ream, whether it's Chucky Lozano, whether it's Uriel Antuna. And then,
and he had,
you know,
no cover.
Right. Yeah, no cover because, you know, Dest is not tracking back as a wing back. He's getting caught up. And so they're basically just saying, yeah, ISO on Ream. Right. And that's ultimately, I mean, I saw it happening and it was like,
oh,
it was like a train wreck, or it was like watching something in slow motion that you wanted to stop, but you just couldn't stop. Mm-hmm. And you watch like the chess pieces move from Tata Martino first, and then Greg Berhalter had to react, but couldn't react quick
enough.
And so Martino subs in Lines.
Yep.
And Lines is, I mean, he gets the ball. And his first action, he megs Tim Ream on the touchline or on the end line. His second action, he gets the ball, cuts in on Tim Ream, scores a goal in the, 78th minute or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, so I'm just going, oh, gosh. It was like watching it happen before our very eyes. Like, this is all they're trying to do is ISO Tim Ream. He's getting tired. He's old. And now you put in someone who's just a tricky dribbler to go against him.
You bring four fullbacks, and you have DeAndre Yedlin, you have Serginho Dest, you have Anthony Robinson, and you have Reggie Cannon.
Yeah.
At that point in the game, DeAndre Yedlin's still in because he's on the far side of the field. But you have Anthony Robinson, Reggie Cannon, and Serginho Dest all out of the game. But you have Tim Ream, who doesn't even play for his team in the game. I think that we can both agree, and I think during – we were all incredibly frustrated. We were all calling, okay, why is Ream still in there? Let's get him out.
Yeah.
You know, Tim Weah comes in, which I was excited to see him, comes in for Dest, and who wasn't having the best game. So I was like, okay, I understand that.
Sure.
But, man, it you could see it happening, like you said, and it was just only a matter of time, and it happened so quickly. Linus cuts in. That makes a shot. I mean, gosh, we've jumped very far forward in the timeline here, but gosh, I mean, you just look, that goes all the way back to that starting lineup decision.
Yeah.
From Berhalter, right? He elects to go with the Tim Ream.
Well, he elects to go with experience, right? And age and veteran kind of stuff, leadership and whatnot. And Tim Ream, okay, he has that in his defense, but I mean, you and me are in the same camp that we'd rather see Anthony Robinson there. We'd rather see Reggie Cannon there. We'd rather see, you know, Dest move back there, or
Miazga
somebody. Even. I mean, yeah. I mean, so, and clearly, you know, we're bagging on Tim Ream, maybe wrongly so or whatnot, but, you know, maybe overly harsh, but, you know, I just have a rough time. And like I said before, when I first saw him in the starting 11 and I saw him as a 10, I'm going, oh, geez, here we go. Here it is. Sure enough.
So let's get back to the very first minute of play. Absolute disaster.
Well, actually, I'd prefer to, you know, start the game at, you know, 2 minutes in instead and just forget that first minute.
Let's forget that first minute. So first it starts up the field. We can't get control of it. We lose a couple of 50-50 battles. We have bad first touches. They switch the field of play. They're going at us, but we win the ball back. I believe it's Yedlin who wins it, plays it back to McKenzie.
Yeah.
McKenzie just, takes a touch, but unfortunately is way too casual with it. And
he tries to pass it back out wide to Yedlin, and Corona just steps in the passing lane, says, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, great awareness by Corona to step in there and just blast it in. So, I mean, well done to him, but just a massive mistake. And that's why, you know, for me, those first couple minutes of the game, and this is one of the problems, I think, with Berhalter's system at times, and we saw it other times in this game, trying to play out of the back against a high-pressing Mexico team. We didn't try it that much, but when we did, it did not look good. It was very, very scary, actually.
Yeah.
And in this instance, in the first 2 minutes, when you're in a game like this, the crowd's going crazy, the intensity is high, do not play with it in the back. You get that ball out of there and just live to see another day.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're in the same agreement here because this is something I tell my teams that I coach, whether it's college or club or whatnot, but youth players or college level players, like, first 5 minutes, we're going to avoid a little bit of risk, and then we're going to settle down into our game, right?
Yep.
Yes, of course, we want to play possession-oriented football. We want to play attractive building out of the back and everything, but first 5 minutes, that's the perfect example of what Mark McKenzie did. And, oh, Coach Greg wants me to build out. We got to pass out here, even though he's got two men on and it's a minute in. And has Mark McKenzie ever played in a game of this magnitude in CONCACAF before for the U.S.? No. So, but instead of just booting it down the field okay, we'll settle in a couple minutes. We pay the ultimate price, and that's, I agree with you. That's kind of Berhalter growing pains.
It is. Mark McKenzie, to his credit, stuck in there after that, and hey,
he shook that off. He shook that mistake off, and I thought he had a pretty much lights out game after that.
Yeah, he made one other kind of mistake, a similar sort of giveaway that ended up giving Mexico a half chance later.
Well,
in the
he had
half.
One that he recovered later on, where Chucky Lozano sized him up, tried to cut on him, mm-hmm. and then have a shot, and Mark McKenzie did not move an inch and just stayed with him and just stood strong and blocked the shot. And I was like, whoa, that was a hell
defending.
Of a play. Yeah.
Well, and here's the thing, because we are going to need Mark McKenzie. Yeah, he made a massive mistake. Same thing like David Ochoa in the U23 in the Olympic qualifiers. He made a massive mistake. Guys are going to make mistakes out there, but it's not about – that mistake.
Well,
right,
especially
how you
when
recover from that mistake.
Well, not only that, but it's like I said before, it's growing pains when you're trying to play build out of the back, possession oriented football. I keep saying orientated. It's oriented.
Oriented. That's right. So we give up the first minute goal. The disastrous. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, what am I about to watch?
Yeah, my stomach sank there, and I was, oh gosh, I think I feel like throwing up a little bit.
Terrible, really, in my mind, and you had a chance to rewatch the game, but first 15 minutes, we could not get on the ball. It was just a bad, bad first 15 minutes.
Yeah,
I'm thinking everything has just gone. Everything's just been shot. We're not doing anything like we planned to do. And, like, what are we watching here? And then Mexico gets a second, or so they thought.
Right.
But
thankfully,
VAR comes in, turns it around, and says offside.
I mean, he was offside by a foot, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, or someone's foot, I think.
It was tight.
And I found it interesting because the ref had to go over to look at the VAR monitor, whereas, a lot of, like, the Prem and stuff that we're watching, they don't do that for offside. They just draw the lines and they tell them, is he on or off?
Right.
So that I was going, oh gosh, here's more CONCACAF kind of shithousery a little bit, right? A little shenanigans going on, like, he gets to decide if it's really on or offside.
But
we get bailed out there because otherwise it's going to be 2-0.
2-0.
Dos a cero, adios, USA, right?
And then, right, you go down the other way, and immediately of a corner kick, Weston McKennie, who this proved to be a theme all night long, that just wins the aerial duel, heads it off the left sidebar there, bounces right to Gio Reyna. Reyna, ready to go, buries the shot with his left foot, ties it 1-1.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, like you said, Big Wes coming in massive on these set pieces for the U.S.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right. I mean, getting in the air, winning things. And I mean, Ochoa had to make multiple saves. I think him and Mark McKenzie had a couple that Ochoa had to save. And obviously that's an Achilles heel of the Mexico national team is defending set pieces. And that's always been a trait of the U.S. men's national team, being sturdy and real tough and getting goals off of our set pieces. So, I don't agree with, Alexi Lawless on a lot of things, but that's one thing that I do agree with him on is his importance of how much he stresses set pieces. And that's what the U.S. has in the past been very good at, just a gritty, tough team that can get goals off of set pieces. Mm-hmm. And so it was nice to see that. And, we're trying to play nice Berhalter style and get goals, pretty attractive goals from open play. But look at the three goals we scored tonight or last night. Set pieces.
Off a corner kick, off a corner kick,
off a corner kick, and a penalty kick. Yep.
Three set pieces. You're right. And I agree with you, too. I mean, Alexi Lawless, you know, sometimes his opinions are quite interesting. But you're right. I mean, hey, he has been there. He's been to the World Cup. He has played at the highest level. He has seen it all. And the fact of the matter is last night for the USA was not pretty. But the U.S. got it done kind of old school way, right? Yep. Set pieces, commitment to defend. Yeah, there were, you know, some mistakes, but hey, the commitment to defend.
Yep.
Great goalkeeping, obviously, as well. We'll get to more of that. Yep. And then just making it hard for the opponent to do much of what they're trying to get into. Yeah, Mexico did have chances, right? But man, the U.S. showed that they are not always going to have to just – they're not always going to have one way they're going to play. And I think a lot of that was because Mexico took the U.S. out of the way that they were trying to play, and the U.S. had to adjust. And they found – they used that heart. They found a way to get it done. And that was, I think, one of the most exciting things for me to see was that, man, this group of guys can do it. And because we have not seen that from this group of guys yet. And this was the first time where we're seeing, hey, these guys can do it.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah, no, that was the thing that stuck out to me the most, too, was the hunger, the belief, the competitiveness, the heart, just the overall heart. And that has been lacking in our U.S. men's national team, right? And so to find that again and to battle it out and win a gritty, tough, ugly game like this, I love that. I loved it.
Absolutely. Right.
So, and I think the other thing too, and maybe we'll touch on this later on, but Berhalter, love him or hate him or indifferent, he's got folks who really don't like him.
Right.
Right. The players love him. Weston McKennie scores that goal. He runs straight over, gives Berhalter a hug, and then the dogpile kind of ensues. Right. So they'll go to war with him.
Yeah.
I think overall is more important than tactics, than philosophy, than style.
Right. You make a fantastic point. I think whatever we want to say about Berhalter's tactics, and I think you and I disagree with Berhalter on varying player decisions, sometimes his tactics. But at the end of the day, the culture that he has created over these last couple of years has to be the greatest thing that he has done for this U.S. men's national team. Because you said it. These guys are ready to go to war for Berhalter.
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter is that is what it's going to take in CONCACAF to qualify for the World Cup.
Yeah.
Tactics are going to play a big part too. But if you do not have that heart and that grit and that passion out there to go and want to go to war for your coach and go to war for your teammates, with your teammates, you're not going to get it done. And I think that's what we saw in the last World Cup qualifying cycle, that we didn't have that. This time already seems to be different. And I think that here's what I'll say is, we hadn't seen that until last night. So that's why I think last night was so vital.
Exactly. No, that 100%. 100%. We had not seen that type of heart and commitment and grit and toughness until last night. And that had been a big, negative, you know, talking point about our players. They're soft, they're fancy. Yeah, they're the golden generation of super technical and just the best players we've ever had, collection of players. But they're kind of soft and they're used to playing on perfect grass fields and this and that. And right. But last night they were getting beer thrown on their heads. They were getting absolutely berated by fans. They were playing a super tough opponent in a final. Right. So massive learning experience. And I think I'm a coach as well. And looking at the way Greg Berhalter was doing some stuff on the sidelines, like there was one where the ball's going out and he's trying to go get it. And the Mexico player kind of gets into him a little bit, and the ref says, "Hey, Greg, you got to stay in your coaching box or whatever." He's like, "I'm just trying to get the ball to give it back to my players so they can throw it in quick and we can play quick." Right? There's another one where he grabbed the ball with his hands awkwardly and tried to just in the air it's like, come on, man, Greg, that was a little unorthodox of a throw. Didn't you ever learn to do a chest pass in basketball?
Right? I kind of love it, though.
I love it, too. He's funky, into it.
Quirky guy a little bit.
Yeah, he's into it, and he's, showing, he's leading by example in a little bit, right? Because all the players are okay, Greg's into this. We're into this, too, right? So right. Whereas not knocking Bruce Arena, but like just kind of older coach that was a lot more.
You never saw that from him.
Yeah, which, you know, fair enough.
At least not in the later years.
Yeah, yeah. So, but yeah, I enjoyed that from Greg yesterday, how the players reacted with him and celebrated with him and all that was great. And then the other part too that was a little bit of a kind of had the chuckle too was when Tata Martino got a red card for putting his arm on the ref yes. when the ref was looking at the VAR replay and Tata Martino puts his arm around, the ref turns around and it gives him a red card, and Berhalter's like right there too and like looking straight up at his arm is like, oh, red card. Oh, and Greg's like trying to like hide how pleased he is, right?
Can you believe that we are the day after this USA-Mexico game, and we can say that Greg Berhalter just beat Tata Martino. Many people consider Tata the best coach in CONCACAF, right? And the fact of the matter is that Greg beat him last night and got it done.
Yeah, I mean, was it because of Greg? I don't know. I don't think so. It's not like he was like, oh, yep, Greg Berhalter made the Ethan Horvath sub, and that's why we won. No, it's not because of that, right? And it's not because of a tactical decision. Oh, he got Tim Ream off before Linez could do him and score a goal. No, that didn't happen, right? So I wouldn't say we won because of Berhalter by any stretch, but all I'm saying is that I think we saw glimpses of what he's been able to do for this team in terms of the overall team commitment to each other and to, you know, the coach and the coaching staff, which is ultimately in these types of games, especially in CONCACAF, I think are more important because tactics go out the window in a must-win game. Legs are heavy. Yeah, we want to try to play a certain way, but sometimes tactics go out the window in these types of things. So what do we have to rely on? Grit, toughness, mentality, set pieces. right. And that's what we were able to do.
And that's the core of what U.S. men's national team over the years has been formed around. And so if we can get back to having that as being our core while adding in more talent and even just players who can do more things than what we've had in the past.
Yeah.
I think that that's what gets me so excited about, hey, if we can see that kind of passion like we saw last night with the skill that we now have too, that is what has me excited going forward.
You're excited? No.
It's crazy, I know.
You're excited about this team? I could never tell.
But for Berhalter, I think, as harsh as I've been on him sometimes, I think that culture piece is such a critical piece of this. And I can tell after seeing last night, the way that the guys responded, that resiliency, coming back down from down, being down twice.
Yep.
All right, let's jump over to the second half, shall we? Well, so first half, we're tied 1-1. Second half, where do we start? Not a whole lot of action maybe earlier on either side. What did you see as the first major thing that happened there in the second half for us? I mean, was it the Zach Steffen injury? Was that the major thing that happened?
I think before that, I think it was at the end of the first half was Zach Steffen's massive save on Chucky Lozano, who got in behind us, actually. So that was actually Zach Steffen's best.
You're right.
And really his only contribution, unfortunately, for him. But it was a massive save. That was on target. He was onside. Yeah, I mean, ball over the top behind our back line, a really nervy moment. Everyone was kind of like waiting and hoping that he was going to be offside, and he wasn't. And he's clearly on.
Yeah, time just run perfectly.
So Steffen actually had a massive save right there, and unfortunately it gets overlooked because of everything else that happened with Horvath and all that. But
honestly, I had forgotten about that play, and what a moment that was, because Steffen came up huge. I mean, Lozano all on his own.
Yeah.
Could have potentially dribbled the keeper, decides to shoot, and Steffen makes the save. I forgot how big that was. Yeah, I think you said it right. It got overshadowed by the second half and extra time that happened. And But so then he gets injured, right, in the 60th or 65th minute or so, somewhere in that time frame. You couldn't really tell what happened. Steffen goes down, kind of, it seems like, in a totally random sort of non-contact thing, which is almost a little more concerning than, you know, than something else that might have had some contact. Yeah, he goes down.
Yeah, he had to come out he scooped up a through ball. He cut it out before the attacking player could get in. And they were trying to split and get it behind, guess who? Tim Ream. So, that's nervy for Zach. He was clutching his knee, looked like his left knee, so I'm hoping it's not ligament. Maybe it's meniscus. Who knows what it is, but it didn't look good, and obviously he didn't get touched on the play. He just kind of like awkwardly, picked it up. So hopefully he's okay. Yeah. But I will say, it's nice to have a backup Horvath who can come up big, right? And seemingly out of nowhere. So
who had a great game against Switzerland, really, despite coming out on the losing end of that one.
Mm-hmm.
Goodness, he was quite good in that game. Making two or three one-on-one saves.
Yeah.
We're thinking, okay, pretty good player. Because we haven't seen much of him, right? He plays for Bruges, had a massive game in the Champions League for them this past fall, but was always their backup keeper there too. So hasn't had a whole lot of opportunities.
Yep.
Happens to now be getting ready to leave and on a free transfer. And I imagine after last night's performance, which I think we'll touch on here, he might be getting some looks.
Well, I hope so. I hope so. He deserves to be the starter for, a team in Europe. If it's not Bruges and somewhere in Belgium, can he play in the Prem, La Liga, Bundesliga? I think the Bundesliga would be a nice fit for him somewhere.
Oh yeah.
So
when you're bringing on a goalkeeper as a sub, obviously as a coach, you basically never plan for that. You always think that your goalkeeper is going to go full 90. So you're bringing on Horvath. What as the coach? What do you think Berhalter told him?
Yeah, probably just did his best to, infuse as much confidence into him as he could. Right, that's your job. And then, obviously Horvath has to get warmed up, get his hands ready, get stretched out, and just jump in. Yeah, cold, but
yeah.
Luckily, and this is something that I noticed on the rewatch.
Yeah.
Because Zach Steffen had the ball in his hands when he went down, and the ref then to restart play just dropped the ball to Horvath. So he immediately gets a touch. Okay, I'm in it. I'm comfortable.
Great point.
And I think honestly that had something to do with kind of the mentality or like the confidence. Yep, I'm going in cold, but here I go. I get a touch on the ball. I think he just picked up his hands and rolled it to Yedlin, I think. But he's in. Right. So
having that successful first pass can be so critical though, right? For whether it's a defender, whether it's an attacker, or if you're the goalie.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. But man, and to touch on this too, Danny, it's interesting because when I reflect back to our previous conversations about the goalkeeper spot and personnel and who we think is, the guy, and, we've always been, Zach Steffen. Yep. He's the number one. And then who's going to be, who's going to emerge as the number two, three, and we've had a pool of guys that we've talked about. And honestly, we haven't talked about Horvath that much, if at all. I mean, we were talking about Matt Turner because he lit it up recently, before that, right? Where we were talking about Turner and we were excited about him. David Ochoa, we got to see with the Olympic qualifiers. So we got an idea of what David Ochoa is like. And then we were talking about some of the other guys who obviously are not really in the picture as much now. But Horvath was one that we kind of glanced over.
Yeah,
and now I'm like, wow, I'm happily proven wrong and eating my words a little bit. Not that we were negatively saying anything, but man, the guy stepped up. He made some big time saves, including the biggest save of the night.
Oh, no doubt about it. I mean, yeah, I'm as guilty as anyone right now. I think Horvath for me catapulted himself from, with the Switzerland game too, taken into consideration. He was, he was one of the top three for me, after that Switzerland game. But all of a sudden now, honestly, and Steffen, again, he made that key save against Lozano, and he's been playing okay. But Steffen in these last couple games looked just playing a little too slow with his feet. And that was one of the things that he was supposed to be getting better at with Man City.
Right.
And he was just way too casual. He put, I believe it was in the first half, Kellen Acosta in a terrible spot, right on top of his own 18-yard box. Casual little pass to him with a guy on his back, and Acosta had to just blast it out wide. Steffens, I've wanted to get on board with the Steffen train and just be totally sold on him. And he just unfortunately has not sold himself to me in the way that I think I've needed him to. And so now you got Ethan Horvath who comes in and in one of the toughest spots that you could possibly come in the atmosphere and everything else, and absolutely is just standing on his head out there, making save after save, holding on to the ball. And obviously, as you said, it makes the PK save all the way in the stoppage time of the overtime there. So, I mean, props to Horvath. And I think he catapults up to the, if you know, code number one for me right now with Steffen. If Steffen's healthy, I think you still got to look at both of them. But I don't know. Horvath seems to be a big game player.
I agree. I think it's nice to have two competent goalies, right? And two guys that, I mean, at this point, I'm kind of like, yeah, if it's Steffen or if it's Horvath, I'm comfortable. I don't care who we're playing, right? We could be playing France.
Right.
I think I'm saying these two guys, I don't know which one is better. And whoever, you know, ultimately gets to be between the sticks for that game, then that's who it is. And I'm okay with that, right? Unless Tim Howard's trying to get back in. I think he's past his prime, but
I think that's such a good thing, though, right?
Real quick, and kind of just going back to what you were saying, and yeah, we were saying Horvath comes in, he plays amazing, but looking back at the timeline, he subs in, and then it's about 10 minutes later, he picks the ball out of the back of his net from Linus's goal.
Yeah, true.
Right? So it's interesting that we're talking about mental toughness and the ability to move on quickly. And for him to concede that goal and then still come up big with a couple later saves against Chucky Lozano. And I mean, I'm specifically thinking about the one that Chucky shot that was fantastic, that Horvath
great
came over.
Save.
Yeah, big, big right-handed right paw got up in the air and kept it going wide left. But yeah, I mean, the mental fortitude that Horvath displayed there to go in cold, get scored on, but then still come up with big time saves and the game winning save at the end in double extra time, stoppage time.
Yeah. So I mean, Horvath the hero, man. Love to see it, and love to see that we have that competition really back in full throttle at that for that number one position. Because I think Steffen just felt like he had it on lock, and I think Berhalter felt like he had it on lock. And after last night,
well, I think a lot of US fans,
Oh, all of us. Yeah, no, I agree. Again, I was as guilty of that as anybody. But I think that the last night changes things, no doubt about it. But maybe do we want to touch on some of the substitutions? And like, this is where we measure a coach, right? The tactics and the substitutions that a coach makes. Again, we touched on the first sub. Weah comes in for Dest.
How did you feel about that one? I know you're a big Tim Weah fan.
I was happy to see Tim Weah, you know, come in, officially captized into the U.S., you know, playing his first competitive game for the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
So excited to see that. But, you know, I thought played okay. Got in physical challenges. I mean, if I'm looking at just across the field in general, we'd have to go player by player. But, like, Weah was, you know, got stuck in. He did some good things, really, you know, kind of created some chances. Mexico defended well against him, you know, blocked a couple of his crosses, but, you know, gave some energy there on that right side. And Dest really just
– he was not at his normal level.
No, I mean, he had one or two good runs in that first half, actually. One that I remember quite well where I was like, okay, there you go, Serginho, let's go. Mm-hmm.
He had one where he was trying to trap a ball out of the sky. And normally you're like, okay, here he goes, bring it down, you know, and play. But he had a horrendous touch. Mexico picks it up, and then they get a chance right off of that. I think that was probably like 10 yards outside of the box, of our own box, that he had that bad touch. And it led to – and then I think he got subbed out shortly after that. which I thought was interesting. And it's kind of like, yep, that was the last thing. I mean, obviously Greg was already thinking, yeah, Serginho probably needs to come out. And then that was like the last one, like, yep, he's definitely coming out with a horrendous touch. Yeah. So
again, I mean, it brings me back. It's just question marks as to, again, the personnel you have in the field at that point though. And, you know, moving Ream to that left back spot, you and I are on the same page. It was just a tactical error by Greg, and it ended up coming back to bite him. Maybe he was thinking about getting someone in there quicker, but it just didn't work.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting because he takes Serginho Dest out, and Dest is on the left wing back, and Tim Reams has the left center back. And so we know Dest isn't, you know, as defensively sound. And then when he puts Weah in, he switches Weah, puts Weah on the right wing back, and then Gio Reyna, I think, comes over and was playing as like a left-sided wing back, which is not a good defender at all either. So I'm going, okay, he's leaving Tim Ream in there, and he's giving him zero help from zero his left-sided help. Wing back. Yes. So
where is
Anthony Robinson, right? Put him there, and now you're – locked down. I think, you know, maybe I think we would have seen Robinson if we went up a goal and we're going to seal this out. Okay. Yeah. Robinson comes in, an athlete, a defender. Perfect. Right. There we go. Yeah. Lock down, control that win, but we couldn't quite do that. So we wanted Tim Weah in there for a little more attacking flair and creativity. And maybe we get something off that and kind of gamble, which fair enough. But who else did we have sub-wise? We had, you know, Sargent started, but Cibicu came on. No wonder goal from him this time. But Sargent and Cibicu, I mean, average. I don't think one did better or worse than the other, to be honest. I thought they were kind of just not very influential, either of them. Whether that's on – it's probably part of it is on them personally, but then also from the team and the fact that we weren't really in a great flow of possession and able to really connect and build off our nines and generate attack.
Yeah, I mean, the game turned into a lot of long balls up towards Sargent or Cibicu, and neither of them were able to really control it and hold off the Mexican defenders. I was thinking, gosh, what a great game for Daryl DK this would be. you know, obviously he's not there, and so they were doing the best they could. I mean, Sargent had a couple of chances in this game, right? He had one in the first half pretty early on. Couldn't put it past Ochoa. And then in the second half, he had one where got beyond the keeper. It was just like a little bit out of his reach, and he tried to put it back on goal, but hit it wide.
Is that the one where Weston McKennie hit it with his left and forced Ochoa to save, and it spilled out to Sargent? But, he couldn't quite wrap his hips around it. To get a shot on goal. It was a good chance. It was a good kind of fast break transition attack as well.
Yeah.
And what I loved about that clip too, if you remember, was Pulisic found himself inside probably the center circle, I think it was. Yeah. And he's got a defender kind of approaching him from, you know, behind, and he just takes a nice touch inside.
Yep.
And just see you later. Burns and now him. We're on the drive.
And that is what Pulisic does so well. And we didn't see enough from him last night, but that was one of the key moments in that match where he did do it effectively.
Yes. And we did not see him do that, I don't think, at all in the Honduras game, unfortunately. But, you know, he starts out wide left, you know, as an 11, as a left winger. But he is so dangerous when he can come inside there, turn with the ball, and drive out a back line.
Oh yeah,
that's my favorite Pulisic time, right? And then so he slots in McKennie takes a touch, another touch to his left, lines up. But he has a good crack with the left. It's a low warm burner, forces Memo Ochoa into a good save. And but yeah, that was a good chance. Let me see who's next. I think the other two subs that we had around the same time, I think it was like 82nd minute or something, was Gio comes off and Leggett comes on for Gio. And then Tyler Adams, we get to see. He comes on for Ream.
Yep. Yeah, you bring on Adams, which I was very excited to see. Obviously, they were on – you know, they had to play him limited minutes. At, you know, pregame, Berhalter's talking about do we start him or not. Yeah. Obviously, they weren't going to start him based on the number of minutes he got. Otherwise, they would give him more.
Yeah, I think they were just trying to play mind games with Tata Martino, you know.
Yeah. But you bring on Leggett again, and – you know, again, this was a game where you need people to get in there, get scrappy, get the job done. And I mean, I don't remember anything standing out for legit for me really one way or the other per se,
no.
But
well, yeah, and he's not like a defensive type of player, but he is a he's a veteran now. I mean,
yep.
He's eight. He's what, 28 or so. I mean,
yeah.
he's been in big games like
yep.
this. So
yeah.
to put someone like him on in the 82nd minute, that's not a bad sub. I'm okay with that. I think that's
yeah.
a decent one.
I mean, Berhalter continuing to lean on that experience factor, right?
Yeah.
That's what you.
Yeah.
That's a very clear theme throughout this game.
Right. Right. And then Tyler Adams to come in and kind of do a job. He had one tackle that I'm just like, that is why we want Tyler in there. I mean,
yes.
he just knocked the player over, and he picked it up and passed it, and we just get the ball back right away. And the player's on the ground. I forget who it was. It might have been Guardado or Herrera. I can't remember, but Adams just kind of like stares down at him on the ground, and I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go on, Tyler. Go on. But that Tyler Adams sub for Tim Ream, that changes our shape from there, right?
Right.
Because
you move Acosta to the left
Kellen
back.
Acosta, left back.
The funny thing is, right, he'd actually played there for Colorado this year,
I
left
know.
Back. And we were
I
making
know.
Fun of that earlier in the year, thinking, why is our potential backup number six playing at left back for Colorado?
Yeah.
But it ends up paying off. I mean, he shows he's versatile. And I'll
yeah.
say this, for Kellen Acosta, did not have a very good first half. Did not – I mean, he was kind of all over the place, a little bit lost. But he grew into the game.
Yeah,
got into some physical tackles,
yeah.
did
yeah.
enough. And then, I mean, the fact of the matter is that because of that goalkeeper sub we were forced to make, Berhalter was short one of the subs that he could really make. So
yeah.
he was
yeah.
– honestly, he was forced into moving Acosta back to that left-back position. He didn't really have any other options.
Yeah, I think you're right there. You know, in order to get Tyler Adams in, he wasn't going to take Acosta off and leave Ream in.
Right. Oh, no.
So it was, okay, we got to get Ream off, but we also need to get Tyler on. So, you know, how do we do this? So, yeah, interesting. I mean, it ended up working out okay. I think I still would have probably liked, you know, Anthony Robinson to come in.
Yeah.
To seal it, right? Just bring in an athletic defender who's
yeah.
left-footed on that side, and there we go. He naturally plays there.
Yeah.
But, you know, in Acosta's defense, I think he did all right. So
yeah.
we went 4-4-3-3 more or less, 4-2-3-1, however you want to look at it,
yeah.
for the rest of that game, right? So
yeah, so it gets into what stoppage time. I'm trying to think if there's any other key pieces there. Well, obviously there are, because Lina scores in the 82nd.
Mm-hmm.
Or when does he score? 78?
78.
Somewhere around that range.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but then, right, we go up, we get a corner kick, what, 2-3 minutes later? And ball
Big
into,
Wes.
Well, yeah, and McKinney rises above, and the guy is just an aerial threat. And
yeah.
He's shown that at Schalke. He's shown that at Juventus. And now continuing to do it with the U.S. men's national team. And what a key moment that was, because Mexico gained that momentum back, but immediately – the response from the United States, go down and get that tying goal.
I loved it. I mean, and that's reflecting what we're talking about fortitude, mental fortitude and toughness and grit. And yeah, we took a goal, but we're coming right back at you in Mexico. I mean, it's the old cliche. Oh, you're most vulnerable right after you score a goal. Well, sure
yep.
enough, you know, and if I'm Tata Martino in Mexico, I am just like pulling my hair out from these set pieces. And
yeah.
It's honestly their Achilles heel. And that was something that I think on our last discussion, I was talking about, you know, other teams scouting reports, you know, on us and talking about our threats and how to deal with the U.S. And yeah, they
yeah.
struggled to deal with our set pieces. And for whatever reason, they still refused to prevent Weston from getting chances.
They
like,
were doing
put
that.
A guy on him, put two guys on him. And don't let him get free runs and free jumps.
Zonal
and
marking. Zonal marking. I mean, it's hard to defend corner kicks, but zonal marking, unless you've got some really big guys, not going to work very well. And
yeah.
Mexico tried to do that last night and did not work.
Yeah. I mean, and Wes, he rises above and, I mean, powerful header. Ochoa gets a hand to it, but he, like, hits it into the left side net.
Yeah.
And what I don't know if you caught it too, but I thought it was kind of funny that, you know, Ochoa, you know, it goes in and hits the side net, so everyone's like, okay, goal. But Cibichu's right there, and the ball kind of spills out, like, in the end, and Cibichu, like, heads it back in, like, an extra header.
Yes.
Love it. Like, and, you know, that I thought was a little bit of, just a little bit of shithousery, too. Like, kind of like, yeah, no, you, I'm putting this back in your net so you can pick it out of your net again, you know, kind of
thing.
That's
right.
So, I enjoyed that. I thought that was kind of funny. And that's Cibichu. That's like a striker's mentality. I'm always going to put the ball back in the net if I can. So,
then, even if
it doesn't count.
Absolutely. So fast forward to late in regulation, ball gets all the way back to Horvath. And then I believe it was Herrera who was on a yellow card already. Or maybe he got the yellow card there, but goes in late on Horvath, kicks him pretty bad in the wrist, actually. And then full CONCACAF just ensues. Both teams are at each other's throats. Guys are grabbing throats.
Yeah, this is like stoppage time of like 92nd minute or something like that.
Yeah, yep. And referee kind of loses control of the situation to some extent. Again, you look back at the replays. Couple of Mexican players could have been tossed from the game based on putting their hands in the throat around Weston McKennie and others. I thought that's just the thing, that I want Weston McKennie on my team. If I am a coach, you can build a team around that guy, because he is the heart and soul of that squad out there, and he is ready to go to battle and is not going to let anyone go and hurt one of his players.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that play too, though, going back to Herrera's challenge, I mean, what really pissed me off is Brooks. Brooks doesn't shield the ball out. He just lets Herrera come in and slide on your goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing, man?
Yeah, you gotta shield it.
Just move your big frame into the path and don't let Herrera come in. Does he think that Herrera's not going to go, like, challenge? And, like, I mean, we already got one goalkeeper hurt. You're going to allow our second goalkeeper to get hurt, John Brooks? Come on, bro.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I was frustrated with that, but then the reaction from like McKennie and Yedlin too, you know, Yedlin was one of the guys who like gets in Herrera's face and Guardado, and they're going to battle for their guys.
Absolutely.
And I will say, from Weston McKennie to not like be phased from Herrera like grabbing at his throat. Like if I grab at your throat, your natural reaction is to like swat your hand away and like,
right,
yeah, it's time to scrap. Right. But Weston just kind of like deals with it, you know, like pretty remarkable. Like, talk about mental toughness and like he's hot right now, but he's not like over hot headed where he's gonna like do something stupid.
He's not getting baited. You're right. Yeah, because that's what Mexico's trying to do. They're trying to bait him. They see the referee's heads turned. No one's watching them, and they say, okay, time to grab Weston McKennie's throat. We're going to bait him into, you know, throwing a punch or trying to tackle me or swat at me or something, right, in reaction. But Weston McKennie just smiles and yells, you know, there's a little bit of yelling, obviously, but able to shake it off and move on. And, you have anything else there in regular time before we move to overtimes?
I don't think so. I think that was pretty much the last bit. You know, well, I mean, we did have we had to stop for a puto chant,
right?
You know, I was a little bit surprised that we made it a full 90 minutes before they had to pause for the first time for the in a game of that magnitude and competitiveness and everything.
This is where FIFA needs to come in. CONCACAF need to come in and lay down the law, man, because Mexican fans are going to continue to do that. And granted, this game was in the United States, so it's a little bit tricky too, right? Because it's not Mexico playing at home doing that chant, but it doesn't matter where the game is being played. There's no place, there's no room for that anywhere.
Well, I do feel for, you know, the Mexico and L3 fans who are not doing that stuff, and they have to live with it. I mean, you know, if we have American fans who are doing shit like that, we're not happy either. I mean, that's a bad reflection of your fan base and your team and your country. Right. Yeah. So I do feel for the ones who you know, also frown on that stuff and that type of behavior. And they're unfortunately roped into that. And now a lot of people are saying, oh, all Mexico fans do that. You know, that's not the truth.
No, that's a fair point. Yeah.
But, you know, it's definitely, and you could even see from the players, the Mexican players on the field, they're like, you know, they're throwing their arms up. They're trying to plead with, you know, the fans, like, guys, we're trying to play soccer, you know, like let's have some respect for the game and everything. And let's get going. But but moving on into extra time.
Yeah, so I think the first period of extra time, I believe this is where the bad tackle from Herrera comes. Am I correct there?
Yeah, yeah.
So the bad tackle comes very late. And
on Tim Weah.
On Tim Weah, yeah. And
Studs up.
In.
Yep. No ball.
No, just a plain, ordinary foul, says the referee. Knowing that Herrera is on a yellow card, says I'm not going to give him another yellow. I mean, some referees would get that as a straight red.
Yeah, yeah. I was shocked. I think I texted you. I was like, this is unbelievable. This ref didn't give a second yellow. That should be a second yellow every time.
Mexico should have been down to 10 men.
Yeah. So and then shortly after that, Herrera gets. He gets subbed out, and Andres Guardado comes in. So that was my bad on that scuffle.
No, that's good.
It wasn't Guardado that was also involved because he came in for Herrera. But, right. Yeah, I mean, Tata Martino, I think he saw that. He was like, oh, I got to get this guy off now because he just – and I know that this ref is like anything else that Herrera does is second yellow time. So So they escaped with that, and I think I texted you. I was like – okay, this ref owes us a significant call.
Yep. So fast forward to the second overtime. We want to fast forward to the key moment.
I mean, yeah. Yeah.
So Pulisic gets it, takes a touch or two, dribbles towards the end line, and contact in the box, contact with the ball, contact with, you know, we
got gets to like see, sandwiched between two
sandwiched
defenders.
Between two players. No foul initially, but then the referee says, okay, we're going to go take a look at this in the VAR.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, after a long look, and this is where Tata Martino has his hands around the referee, gets the red card, right? Yeah. You know, kind of chaos is ensuing around this whole area. Everyone's looking in. Mm-hmm. Referee comes out, gives the big, emphatic point to the spot.
Yeah.
Crowd's going crazy. Pulisic grabs the ball, says, hey, this is mine.
Yep.
And going to go hit this top bends, and he does. Top 90 on the right side. Goes and celebrates in the corner. More beer bottles, Coca-Cola stuff thrown at our players. Gio Reyna, as you mentioned earlier, I believe, gets nailed in the face. He's actually down for a little bit. A little bit of concern there. But, man, I mean, to step up in that moment, Christian Pulisic wasn't his greatest game. I mean, again, wasn't terrible. Just Mexico, I think, did a good job of kind of taking him out of the game for the most part. But he had some good moments, but finally stepped up in that big moment and came up clutch.
I mean – when you look at that PK, I mean, unsavable PK. Opens his hip, buries it top corner pretty much with pace and power.
Yeah.
You see, that is a big time play by a big time player.
Yep.
And that is what you want. And then for him, well, also before that, during all the kind of like time wasting and stuff, some of the defenders were going and like trying to mess up the PK spot. They're digging their cleats into it and like trying to mess it up, and you know, just mind games, right? So for Christian to stay focused and bury that, I mean, big time play by a big time player. And then for him to take his shirt off and go shush the crowd over there and like invite the beer and bottles thrown at him, like, you know, and just soaking that up literally. awesome. And there's like that picture that's like a freaking Renaissance painting.
Oh my goodness!
Just like
going viral on the internet. Love it.
Yeah, I mean, so unreal. I mean, so exciting. And I don't think it was a PK, Danny.
Yeah, it
I
was
looked
certainly
at it again and again. I went, this is a significant call. This is a makeup call from this ref. He feel like maybe he owed us one, and here it is.
He heard your text to me, and he said, "Okay, they deserve." No, I mean, you're right. It was questionable, and this is one of my problems. Unless it's like clear and obvious, just in general, right? He PK, he takes so many looks at this thing, and to the USA's favor, makes the call. And there was contact, and so I could see why he did make the call. But yeah, I mean,
but was it a clear error that needed to be overturned? I don't think so. Right. And I know that if this was happening against us, I would be livid.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So. I mean, I would have said there's no way that's a PK. And so, but Pulisic buries it, comes up clutch, and then there's, what, you know, 6 minutes to play. And he's got to do whatever it takes to close this game out. And in right before the 120th minute, right, then there's a potential, you know, call for a handball by Mexico saying that it hit one of the U.S. players in the hand. And we have another VAR call. And again, this is the same situation as one. I mean, McKenzie, you know, what is he supposed to do with his hands? By his side, you know, is it partially out from his body? Yeah, it's just in a natural position. I don't even know what the handball in the box rules anymore. It's changed every year, it seems.
Yeah, it's super subjective, you know. And I found this one really difficult, too, because, yes, it hits his hand. But I think he's also, like, turned. And it depended on what camera angle they were showing on the VAR.
Right.
Because there was one that looked like, oh, yeah, he's definitely got his hand out. And then the other one was kind of like, well, he's turned sideways, and the ball's actually – coming real close to him. It's not like he actively put his hand out, so it was tough. But as soon as I saw it hit his hand, and I went, well, the ref just awarded us a PK for one that I did not think was a PK, I said, yeah, he's gonna call this one too. So, and sure enough, so ultimately you can kind of look at it and you go, well, it kind of balances out, right? He gave two PKs that I don't think were PKs. You know, he could have either called them both or none, and you know, the wrong thing would have been if he called one and not the other. So thankfully he didn't do that.
I agree with you there, I think. And it ended up being for this massive moment. I think before the moment of the Horvat save, I think a little bit of some good gamesmanship from the U.S. Some guys from kind of both sides, you know, kind of having like a little bit of pushing and shoving on the outside of the box. Referee, you know, guys going into the area. Referees making sure that everyone's cleared out of the 18 and the D on top of the 18. Right, so taking some extra time, making the Mexican players thinking about it a little bit more, and it just a little bit. You know, Christian Pulisic has the chance to go in and, you know, just say, you know, tell Horvat he's got this, right? You know, this is yours, and that little extra bit I think maybe even helped make a difference too.
Well, sure. Well, and certainly talking with his goalkeeper coach about, because you know, they had done a thing, as you said, right? So during that moment, you know, and leading up to the PK, Horvath has more time to really kind of, okay, Andres Guardado, El Príncipe is taking this one, you know, coach, which way is he naturally, you know, tend to go to and get set. And clearly that helped, right? Didn't you say that Horvath had like a long session?
Yeah, I mean, it was fantastic. Yeah, Horvath, Ochoa, and Zach Steffen that morning with their goalkeeper coach watched about 30 to 40 minutes of Mexican players taking PKs and figuring out every single one which way they're going to go.
Yeah.
And so obviously it paid off. And those are the little things, the little things that make a difference in the moments like that. That, like, maybe 90% of the time, 99% of the time, that's not going to make a difference. But that 1% where that you're in the game and you need to know which way they're going to go. He makes the dive, fantastic save, puts it wide. And even after that, even a little bit of chaos ensued, right?
Yeah.
Always after a PK, the ball's still in play. Chaos kind of ensues.
Yeah, it still wasn't quite cleared, and I was still going, oh, there was like two or three Mexican attacking players on the weak side.
they were wide.
Please do not
get.
Please. I was, and I think they like lobbed the ball kind of just back into the mix, and I'm like, if they'd have lobbed it over to the far side, then we would have been in trouble still, you know, because we weren't organized defensively. It was kind of like chaos. Get this out anywhere we'll do, right?
Well, there's that like, pure excitement from the save of making, and then no one is covering that our left side of the defense.
But luckily, Horvath's, you know, it ends up coming back to him. He dives on it, collapses on it, and holds onto that ball for dear life. And then, you know, Brooks and McKenzie and players come over and just like, celebrate with Horvath. It's awesome to see, you know. Oh, love man. Love those moments. Those are goosebumpy type moments, right?
Yeah, and so. This is for Horvath, who grew up his hometown 30 minutes outside of Denver, 30 yeah. minutes from the stadium. I mean,
yeah. It's a movie script. Yeah.
Yeah. Incredible. And so from there, it's just about closing the game out. Even, you know, that PK save was in like, what, the 123rd, 124th minute, something of that nature.
Yeah. Well, there was 11 minutes on that, you know, so ultimately we got to, you know, 130.
Yeah. You get all the way. Yeah. You get all the way to the very, very end. And finally the referee blows that final whistle. The celebrations ensue. And wow, what a time to be a U.S. men's national team fan. I mean, we have been doing this podcast for a few months now, and this is kind of been building up to this, the first competitive tournament that we've had. Yeah. And the U.S. showed the grit, showed the grime to figure out how to get it done. And they absolutely did. And has me not only excited about last night, but man, I am pumped up as we go forward here.
I couldn't tell. Are you sure? Are you pumped up?
I think it's interesting. You know, I will say this. You know, there's one player, one field player who did not play in either of the two games. Every other field player that Berhalter had on this roster featured.
Yunus
Musa did not feature. And honestly,
he should have.
It was quite frustrating as a fan. And again, this is obviously a coach. It seems to be a coaching decision that, again, he went for experience and decided other tactical reasonings that he felt Musa's not the guy here. But
and obviously, we don't know stuff that's going on behind the scenes. I mean, we're always looking from an outsider's perspective in, but we don't know exactly what's going on in camp there, right? In their training sessions,
true.
Right at their team, you know, meals and, you know, scouting and, you know, video and all that stuff, and how Yunus is operating. Who knows? Maybe there's some behind the scenes. I don't know. But I think I tend to agree with you that it's probably Greg just went with experienced guys for a game of this magnitude, which is fair enough. But I want Yunus to get there, right? And I think he will, obviously. But I think he could have slotted in there and done just fine.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing.
If not better than some of the guys we had, right? So
Jackson Ewell.
I'm glad he did not play. I'm glad he did not play. We would have not won the game if Jackson was in the game. No,
Jackson Ewell, love the guy, but the fact of the matter is that he is not athletic enough. And he, in that Honduras game, he played almost – he had like a couple of mistakes early on. After that, he completed a lot of passes, but they were all backwards and sideways.
Yep.
Did not do anything to progress the game forward.
No.
Yunus Musa in there, or I mean, again, Kellen Costa did better, but unfortunately, Jackson Ewell is not doing it for me anymore. But yet, Greg Berhalter feels like, hey, he's the guy. And Greg is like trying. It's interesting, right? Because you have Tyler Adams as this interior six. And he is the guy who covers lots of ground, maybe isn't as flashy of a passer as Jackson Ewell. So then Berhalter brings in Ewell, kind of a different player, is a different player than Adams, and is trying to force him into doing these things. And it's almost as if he's overcomplicating the system, and not just Ewell, kind of all over the field. And that's, I think, sometimes where Berhalter seems to have the culture thing down. Guys are going to go to war for him. But he's overcomplicating things. Let's figure out how to get the best out of Pulisic, how to get the best out of Sergiño Dest. How to get the best out of Reyna, right? And not make it so complicated.
I think that's a valid point, and maybe something that we'll need to see as we progress. I mean, we got Costa Rica in a phase, so we'll see what that looks like. You know, I want to see Yunus Musa. I want to see Daryl Dike.
Please.
I mean, I want to see more Horvath or even Ochoa. I probably don't need to see David Ochoa.
I'd love to see Horvath again.
Yeah. So let's see some guys. Let's give Tim Weah a start. He only played in the final.
Give me Weah and Aaronson on the wing DK up top. Would love to see that. I mean, that's what they brought DK along for, is to play in this Costa Rica game. I want to see DK.
Exactly. So I think we'll get a good taste of that coming up and going forward. I mean, and just to kind of, you know, wrap things up a little bit. But as a coach, I tend to side on, you know, like Berhalter side, like I want to give him the benefit of the doubt.
Sure.
and I want to like kind of, it's just kind of the, you know, coaching circle or whatever, like you're stand by another coach. You give them the benefit of the doubt first before kind of really attacking them or whatever. But yeah, I don't disagree with he was making things harder than I think they needed to be.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how this group develops. But man, what a game this was. What a, you know, trophy to lift and experience. And I mean, I've been giving you some stick for you being super excited and pumped up, but I am just as much. I just can't wait for World Cup qualifying in a couple months in September to get going. And I have big dreams for 2022 and beyond, man. It's gonna be awesome.
Hey, if you told me before this game that Pulisic not gonna have a great game, yeah, he came up clutch, but not gonna have a great overall game. You're going to tell me that McKenzie is just getting baptized by fire and maybe not necessarily in the best way, but, you know, in some ways it might be beneficial for him in the long run. Yeah. You're going to tell me that, you know, Ream is getting torn apart by Linus. yeah, you know, Sergio and Yedlin have, like, pretty average, like, mediocre overall games. Granted, you know, Yedlin had some good defensive moments, but you told me all that. And you said, oh, we're still going to win. Wow. What a result. I mean, the fact of the matter is that we found a way to get it done.
Found a way.
That it has to be a trait of the U.S. men's national team moving forward.
Yep, the American heart. It's come back, right? Mm-hmm. A little bit of the old has come back into the new. So,
that's right.
Yeah, man. Can't wait.
Well, hopefully we'll see some Yunus Musa and Daryl DK on Wednesday evening. This has been Play the Advantage. Again, USA 3, Mexico 2 in the Nations League final. On top of CONCACAF for right now, Cody, it's been fun, and we will see you again soon.